Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 98, being recorded on the 14th of October, 2015, with special guest, Ashwin Kamath. My name is Sujit Mello, and on Skype with me, I have Kale Teeter and our special guest. Now, Evan's off tonight. He had some personal things to take care of at home, and we let him have the evening off so that he could focus on that. And we've got our special guest, Ashwin Kamath, who will introduce himself shortly. But before we get there, let's just bring our listeners up to date with the latest in the Azure space. And Kale, it sounds like there have been quite a few updates this week, right?
Yeah, I'd say, there's a lot of big ones here, but one of the biggest ones was around PowerShell. So there's been some new preview version of that released. This is a long time coming, but one of the huge pieces of this is the deprecation of the Switch Azure mode. So as most of our listeners probably know, had basically like this mode to switch between commandlets because of some things in Azure, right? We changed and we had this ARM architecture that came along, and those kind of conflicted with some of the stuff on the service side that we had before. And so when you wanted to make changes, it's a little bit of a challenge, right? So you would say, okay, I want to go do something in the ARM side. I would have to go do that. And then sometimes you would have to come back to the other side to do things too. So the idea was to try to get rid of that so that we don't have to run that switch in between there. And so it's been a long time coming, and so I'm excited about that. Hopefully we can see that thing out soon.
And this is allowed to switch between the ASM and the ARM command lists, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And so they've basically duplicated all the most of the command lists. Is that what happened? They're giving them brand new names?
I'm not sure. I mean, because the implementation took a bit, so I'm not sure if there was just namespace conflicts. That's what I assume, where, you know, if you did have them in the same namespace, it would cause problems because new ones had different features and things. So I think that's the gist of what was going on there. But, yeah, it's not an easy thing to change.
Right. It sounds like they've added this, RM, right? You put the little word RM in between in the command. Okay, hopefully, I guess that at least that avoids the need to use that switch every time, so it does make it a little cleaner, I think.
And it takes a couple seconds at least, you know, when you do that, because it like unloads commands and reloads commands, so it was kind of
right. Easy. And names, it's never good to use names or anything, right? You can always make mistakes, so I think this is a little more type safe, I suppose. That's the correct way to do it. So also then in the SQL database space, we've had some updates. Now there's always encrypted data. So the data in SQL Azure provides that option right now. It's something new that was announced recently. The other big one is Azure Backup. And now we could use it to back up all your Azure IaaS VMs. I think this was in preview before, and it is now generally available. So I think this is the big feature for customers that want to take backups. Although, I don't know. I mean, the Azure VMs are backed up with the storage, which is very secure as it is. Why would somebody want to do Azure Backup on top of that? What's the rationale behind there? Is it just to take like snapshots in point in time so that they can roll back to a previous version?
Yeah, I think that would be one of the use cases for it, is definitely being able to say I have a different backup in case something goes haywire and they can't reach their machines or something for reason. I mean, we have, like you said, high availability and geo-redundancy and all these kind of things built into the underlying system. But it's also just like a security thing for them. They say we're a big business and we want to make sure that we have our stuff backed up here. And it might even be just for auditing and some of the compliance things that companies have.
Okay. And also in the SQL Azure space, the always-on feature now can work with Azure Site Recovery. So that's something that we had before, but it didn't work with SQL Server, and now it does.
I wanted to just touch base there real quick on that SQL stuff. So there's a big blog post that just came out today about SQL in general, basically about, the data security and how we've kind of stepped up the game there. And like you mentioned, Sajid, the Always Encrypted is in public preview. A lot of the other ones, some of them are going GA, like a TDE, Transparent Data Encryption. Now there's going to be Azure Active Directory Authentication is in public preview. There's data masking that's GA now. So there's a lot of things that happened there that make this, I think, a little easier for enterprises to start engaging with now. Those were like the big things, right? It was all around encryption and security for these SQL workloads, barring the performance and other challenges with, moving to a cloud-based system. But so I think this is a huge on-ramp for people, especially if they were hung up by any of these things in the past.
Exactly. Yeah, they should remove the last set of doubts to move your database to the cloud. I think the most interesting one that caught my attention came in today actually was Azure AD domain services. You can now use Azure AD as a domain controller, which is it really brings up a whole bunch of interesting scenarios. We really need to talk about that in some episode or the other. I think we when Windows 10 was released, we did have a discussion about how Windows 10 could use Azure AD to store your domain, your computer objects, and things like that. This looks like it goes beyond that now, right? It can be a domain controller for your entire domain.
This one's more targeted for cloud-based workloads, as opposed to saying, let's take your and uproot your on-prem and move it up there totally, like all your AD infrastructure. At least the initial bits that I saw come out, people were saying the guidance was that it was around, workloads up in the cloud. So if you had a lift and shift, here's a prime case where this blows up: is we lift and shift the application, which basically means let's put it on IaaS and just run it up there the way it was. But they had like dependencies on like domain authentication, like or Kerberos or those kind of things that were built into the application. So now it was like, well, we can't just lift and shift because you have this thing built in, this authentication mechanism, and we can't make it work unless we put a domain controller up in the cloud. And then it was like, oh, now we got to put a domain controller up there. So I think this will like solve definitely that problem. It looks awesome.
Got it. God, that makes so much sense. Thanks for clarifying that. And then, of course, we have talked about the role-based access controls in Azure, the easy role-based access controls, because it used to be not so easy, but now they've made it really easy, and that facility is GA. We'll definitely touch upon that in a future episode. Anything else that caught your fancy, Kale, before we turn the
Yeah, the
floor
only
over
other last
to
little
Ashley?
nugget was the CLI tools we have for the cross-platform stuff. They now support the Microsoft account logins versus a certificate-based auth, so good thing too. That's something new that just came out.
Great. All right, Let's introduce our, or let me allow my our guest Ashwin to introduce himself. Ashwin, can you please give our listeners a quick overview of what your role is at Microsoft and what you're doing in the Azure space?
Yes, Sujit. Thank you. So my name is Ashwin Kamath, and I'm a program manager on the Azure Application Platform team, in which I'm a member of the sub team that drives Azure monitoring and diagnostics features, for the infrastructure and for the platform. With respect to that, features such as alerts, autoscale, etc. on top of monitoring metrics as well as logs are what my team is focusing on building for the customers. Right. I've been on the Azure team for close to 6 months now, and prior to that, I was on the Windows Developer Platform team, as well as on the Visual Studio and .NET team, where I used to focus primarily on features related to diagnostics, profiling, and debugging.
Great. So, I think the first thing that comes to mind to me is that most certainly the role that you're playing and the feature that you're working on, which is alerting and things like that in the cloud space. For any customer or anyone that's planning to move to the cloud, that's the number one thing that comes to mind, right? I put my applications out there. How do I know what they're doing, and how do they tell me that something's wrong? I'm sure you've heard that customers talk about that.
Absolutely. Pretty much any metric that you have access to, or pretty much any metric that's available out there for any resource, on Azure, you can have alerts configured on top of it. And these are alerts, or when I call them alert or alert rules, are basically some means of notification that you can have by configuring a particular threshold, right, on top of this metric. If you just pick, like, say, VM that has CPU, memory, network in, network out, disk read, disk write, all those things, you can say, hey, I need to know, or I need to be alerted if this particular metric goes beyond, the CPU goes beyond 70% or so. And so that is an out-of-box free feature that comes available, within, the whole monitoring diagnostics, realm, where you can say, hey, here is my threshold, which is basically 70%, like you said, and say, hey, alert me, as in email me, email my co-admins, admins, or even send an email to this custom, string of email addresses that need to be notified. And so that's been how our alerting model worked for a while now. I guess it's been email has been the primary thing, as well as notifications in the portal itself, for which you had to be logged in the portal. That was it. So customers were aware of this. I mean, customers had a quick and easy way to get access to the state or health or the condition of their resources. And so we just wanted to, give more, right? I mean, definitely customers said, no, we would love to have other means of, notification
Right,
channels for these, right?
because customers, I mean, especially I work with a lot of enterprise customers, and they use all these, fancy tools like BMC Patrol and whatever HCI Unicenter and whatnot, right, to monitor their entire organization and everything and
Exactly.
around this. So what do these kind of customers do then?
Right. So we wanted to start with a solution that's, really scalable, and, customers can customize it on their end as well, integrate it with, the systems that they're going to build, or systems with popular DevOps notification services and incident management services that, they've been using. So what we came up with is, like, we should have, we could do something like, webhooks, right? So we decided that, hey, just like we do it today for email, just like we send email notifications, we could definitely add a webhook, a parameter where we can emit a particular, metadata of, JSON payload to a webhook, which is basically a web endpoint, configured or mentioned by the customer, and we could send all that data, like, just when the alert triggers, right? And with that, you're going to get all the necessary information about that particular resource, as well as, the condition that triggered the alert, the present condition, the threshold, everything, including some, additional parameters such as what the subscription ID is, what the resource ID is, what's the location of the resource, and all those things. And so that the customer can integrate on their side as anything. I mean, just like you mentioned, they can use those industry-leading tools that can, receive this data, obviously as JSON, and then parse it to log a bug, parse it to send a custom email, or even, send an SMS using some of the, VoIP tools out there that can handle webhooks, right? So that was the thing we wanted to do, which is more like a generic thing, but it's easily pluggable into a lot of existing, notification systems or channels out there.
Yeah, I was wondering, Ashwin. So, does this work the same when it's calling out to these web services with this webhook technology? Is it doing the same thing? Like, I know in the past when we had web endpoint monitoring, we could set those up and like have it kind of ping our site and say what the, if it goes beyond such a threshold of milliseconds that we could go ahead and trigger an alert to tell somebody that the site's, responding slowly. And then like after, if it corrected itself though, it would like actually send another email then too saying, okay, it's corrected itself, everything's cool. Does this do the same thing? Like once you hit your threshold, it sends an email, and then also when it gets corrected, it sends one, or?
Yes, exactly. So what you're talking about, we call them web tests, right? So those were web tests from the Application Insights platform, which basically used to ping your service, whichever has an endpoint, right? And it used to, measure the ping time and whether it's slow or fast and all those things. And then it used to send emails, right? This is not using that same technology, but it's basically, this is sending it out, right? This is about sending the information from within Azure background services to an endpoint that you have specified. upon, whenever the alert triggers. When I say triggers, I mean there are two states that the alert can have, which is it's either activated or it's resolved. So you may get an alert saying that, hey, your CPU has gone above 80%, right? And so that webhook just triggered it. It sent a post message. It made an HTTP post message with all the JSON data. And later, say 20 minutes later, it just the CPU fell down to like 75. And based on that condition, you have already configured for your alert. You're going to get another webhook with JSON fired. In this case, it's going to say the state is resolved. So basically, at your receiving end, you can specifically track it over time and say, hey, this is the same alert because it has the same ID and the same name, right? And so, but here is the trace of it, or here is the trail of it, that hey, 20 minutes later, and it got resolved. So you can pretty much monitor it and say, okay, this alert resolved by itself, or I can go and take an action on it.
Right. And so the can this happen in parallel? They can send an email and also send this
Yes,
webhook alert.
absolutely, absolutely. So that's the beauty of it. So I mean, in the future, we want to add more actions, and obviously, this is the first one. So as in second one, right? So we already had email, and we added in parallel to that. You can also, just as if you leave the webhooks empty, then nothing is added. But if you add a valid HTTP or HTTPS URI inside, then we take it and save it as the here is a webhook that's configured too. So
Right.
we do all in parallel. Here is one more trick that the customers need to know is that programmatically, if you can do this via our SDK and API, everything, right? So programmatically, when you're going to do this from an SDK, you can configure even up to five webhooks for a single alert. So which means if you want to send this alert to five different notification channels of your own, custom notification channels of your choice. Let's say one is a pager duty, webhook. The other one could be a Twilio-based SMS. The other one could be a HipChat, message, and the last one could be like a Slack, a channel message. So you could configure all of these if you're going to do this, using a simple program. And we have also given a sample. We just published a sample also along with the release so that people know how to do that if they want to.
Yeah, I think the real powerful thing about this that you have in your blog post, Ashwin, is around being able to actually automate the recovery. Like you could actually like build logic on the other side of this thing. So like when that thing triggers, go do this thing, not just beyond alerting someone and saying, "Hey, something's wrong." You could say, "Oh, we know that always happens. So when that happens, these certain conditions, go ahead and restart the site or go ahead and do this thing." That's pretty cool.
Yes. So speaking of which, we worked with the Azure Automation team, and they were excited to do this too. So they already enable webhooks, like incoming webhooks, to take an action on any resource, right? So I mean, when we built this in partnership with them, they specifically wanted to have the resource ID, I mean, all these metadata about that particular impacted resource, right? So the resource ID of the particular, let's say, VM that is getting that just triggered a CPU, I mean, high CPU metric, that information, the subscription information, the metadata, everything we can give them. And so then they take it, and once their webhook receives it, they can now easily go and take an action which says, hey, maybe you want to do some cleanup, or maybe you want to stop running some scripts that you know are probably going to be slowing your PC down or consume a lot of CPU. So you can do any action because now you own that automation script that can go and automatically do something for you if some alerts are messing up your system.
If the user entered the incorrect URL, or maybe they're pointing it to some place that they shouldn't be pointing, maybe a less secure endpoint, do we do any validation on this URL?
Yeah, so we validate it to be a well-formed, HTTPS URI, right? I mean, apart from that, even in the back end, even if customer enters this via the portal or via the SDK, we validate that it's a well-formed, a valid HTTP or HTTPS URL. But if customer provides any arbitrary endpoint, I mean, we don't validate it further. It's a basic fire and forget thing
Okay.
from our side. But on the receiving end, there are multiple ways for the webhook receivers to to configure authentication for this. For example, we support basic authentication as well as a token-based authentication, right? So, I mean, the classic example is our integration with PagerDuty. So PagerDuty appends with an access token at the end of the URI, which is specific to just, that particular member or user of PagerDuty, right? So unless that access token is available and is not an HTTPS, they will not be able to, impact anything on the PagerDuty side. Yeah, that's how we take it
Yeah, I
on.
would imagine that that's a critical thing, right? That there should be applications, receiving applications should be checking for some token or
Absolutely. Yes, yes,
authentication.
yes.
Otherwise, you could have some malicious person sending in arbitrary alerts on the same
Exactly.
port.
Exactly. Yeah, we cannot validate it because we take what customer has provided and then we just try to fire it and forget. And we don't expect any data back from it. If we log the status code that we hear from the receiving point, and if we get a 200, we know that this has been accepted or whether it has been processed at all. So
Yeah, that was going to be my question. That was kind of like along with Sujeet's. What happens if that thing that they stand up, let's say they stand up a custom web service, and for some reason that thing goes down or somebody takes it down? What is there any like audit logs that you can actually see to trace to
I
see that
mean,
this thing was broken? Yeah.
we log it on our side, so that is available in the Azure, internal diagnostic log. So if CSS has a question for us, or if we want to really troubleshoot stuff, then we definitely can look at that. But that information is being logged, right?
Okay, and also I guess I think it has the same stuff as what the alerts did before, where you got this whole threshold thing, so it's not like spamming. So it has some sort of governing there, right? So it's not just gonna like start spamming immediately when
Yeah,
something happens, right?
it's exactly. So I mean, all that we are doing is adding just one more notification channel for the existing alerts. We
Yeah.
are not changing anything for the alert. So I mean, you're the today we the minimum condition we have is if a metric has crossed the threshold for at least 5 minutes. So you could get something as fast as 5 minutes after you turn on something, right? So yeah, I mean, we're not changing anything on the actual infrastructure of the alert itself.
That's great. I love this webhook feature. Very nicely designed and thought of. Great. Anything else, Kale,
Yeah.
you want to ask, or for Ashwin, if anything else you want to add?
I think from my side, I mean, this looks awesome. I can't wait to start trying it out.
Right. So we hope customers like it, and we are going to see what feedback we get. So one more place where customers can see or trace all the alerts or autoscale events, which are in the same category as alerts that fired in their subscription, is the audit logs. I mean, sometimes customers ask us, "Hey, I don't know whether this alert was fired or not." But an easy place to go and just view them is just go to the audit logs and then just look for anything which has as status as warning, or you can just type the word alert in the search filter text and then search for all the alerts that have been that were fired within your subscription over a period
Right,
of time.
right.
So it's easy. They would know that. They can track it on the audit logs directly. Or I mean, sometimes some customers said, "Hey, how am I going to track it? Should I go and measure? I mean, search for all the emails I received." Instead of that, you can just go to the portal and look for this. So and it'll contain all the metadata of what fired when as well.
Now, there isn't any additional cost associated with this feature, is there?
No. So we don't charge anything for alerts at all. And we
Okay.
don't charge anything for those notification channels at all.
Great.
So yeah.
So no reason not to use it
Yeah,
then.
no reason not to use it. Just go play with it. I mean, we have shipped even a simple sample app to do this programmatically too, if they want to play with and try calling multiple webhooks and all that. Plus, there's something cool I would ask most customers to go try is that we have shipped logic apps, inbuilt, like pre-built logic apps, with which you can easily configure Twilio SMS for your webhooks, a Slack message, as well as even dropping these alerts into a queue. So these are pretty easy to configure, right? You just need a Twilio account, and you can start with a trial account. You can start with a Slack account, which is obviously free, and you can watch it work end to end, where an alert is triggered and you get an SMS on your phone, or you get a message in your Slack channel with all this metadata.
I
So
see. So
go ahead
you
and
guys are
try it
pro
out.
you provided the sample for that, and then once you
Oh,
stand
these
it
are not
up.
samples. These are like real pre-built
Real
logic
quick.
apps that they can just one click and download and install
Install.
in their Azure subscription. And these are not samples. These are like available for real.
So
So the blog contains links to those,
you would
you can go from
you
there.
would stand it up, and then that URL you would put in the web.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just one click deploy to include the logic app that contains the mechanism to deliver a Twilio-based SMS, and it just spits out. But when it creates, it just spits out and gives you the webhook URI that you just need to go and copy paste into this webhook text box for your alert. And the only thing that you have to enter for that logic app is, hey, what is the phone number you want to send the SMS to, right? Which you get when you configure your Twilio account. That's it.
That's so cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's a very nice tip. Ashwin, I think we've definitely got a lot of information from you today. I really appreciate your time. This is a very cool feature, and we'll definitely, if you have any links that you want to share with our listeners, send it to me. I'll put it in the show notes as well. And
Absolutely.
I'm sure our listeners will be anxious to try this. Thanks
Thank you.
again for your time. Appreciate
Thank
it.
you so much. I appreciate you having me on the show, and let's see what feedback we get from customers.
Sounds good.
Thank
Thanks,
you.
Cale.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Take
Thanks,
care.
guys.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle @AzurePodcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.